as you all know, you should all know Sister Marguerite, who wears many hats around here. She just had to finish feeding the birds, you know, on her way to come back here and do this. But this topic, obviously, is a topic of great interest in the context of our culture. We were, you know, obviously we're pretty traditional, or we wouldn't be going around dressing the way we are. So, you know, for us, this wasn't a live issue. And yet you find a lot of people wanting to know, well, what is the place of the woman in the Orthodox Church? We thought that was rather obvious. Sister Marguerite has, you know, done some research on it and found some things that surprised me. And we'll see what you all think. It's going to be a relatively long talk. Would you like to basically get through most of the talk and then do questions? Is that the preference?
I think so. If there's something that doesn't make sense, please stop me. But I found writing on the topic, it's really easy to like go down side paths and wind up pursuing them pretty vehemently and forgetting, you know, what the main root of inquiry was. So with that in mind, maybe general questions we'll try to keep for the end.
Okay, so hopefully this will help me a little bit.
Can you hear me through the speaker?
Because
I've been sick all week, so I'm hoping this will help me get through an hour of talking. Okay, well, I've been pretty apprehensive about giving this talk, mostly because I was concerned that people would come with very high expectations of hearing something profound, and I'm not going to say anything especially profound, but my goal for myself in pursuing this question was really to provide myself with some context for some of the discussion that one hears regarding the relationship between men and women. And so that's my hope, is that in this presentation you will walk away in an hour or so with a greater amount of information in which to place some of the comments and conversations that we hear regarding the relationship between men and women in and outside the church. So, you know, you'll have more tools with which to assess what you hear. So, the background. 2 years ago, Mother Melania told me, you're going to write a master's thesis. And I had no idea what topic I would pursue. And after months of false starts and spinning my wheels, I was reading a back issue of St. Vladimir's Theological Quarterly. It was from 2007. And in it, there was an article titled, "The Marriage of Priests Towards an Orthodox Theology of Gender." And in this article, which was written by Dr. Timothy Petitsis from Holy Cross Theological School in Boston, Dr. Petitsis made some observations and reflections that I thought were fairly profound. And then he said some other things that I found really confusing. And I gave the article to Mother to read, and we talked about it afterwards, and we both agreed, well, there are some good things in this article, but there are some things that just are very perplexing. And Mother's suggestion to me was, find out what the fathers of the church have to say on this question. You know, let's assess what's in this article against the greater tradition of the church. Well, to me, the thought of going straight to patristic sources and, you know, finding commentary on the nature of men and women and, you know, putting that together into some sort of theological schematic firsthand was just overwhelming. I mean, I'm a baby when it comes to theology, so my best effort, you know, in that direction was to look for Orthodox people who themselves have gone to the patristic sources and see what they say about what the fathers of the church say in regards to the nature of men and women. So when I started to do that, when I started to try to find any article I could that addressed what it means to be a man or a woman, I found that that question is intrinsically linked to the debate concerning the ordination of women to the priesthood. And I'll just, as a side comment, say that today, when I'm talking about the ordination of women, I'm just talking about the ordination of women to the presbyterate and the episcopacy, not talking about the ordination of women to the diaconate, because that actually is sort of its own debate. So just talking about the ordination of women to the priesthood or the episcopacy. And that conversation goes back to the 1960s, when the World Council of Churches made the ordination of women one of its primary topics of conversation. And the Orthodox were engaged in the World Council of Churches back then, and the most basic response that the Orthodox had to that question was, well, we've never ordained women. And that's kind of it. And for many people, especially people in the Orthodox Church, that answer is sufficient. You know, we have such a respect for tradition. A lot of us don't feel the need to go any further. But there are people in the Orthodox Church, and then I would say probably pretty much everyone outside the Orthodox Church wants to know, why is that your tradition? What's behind that tradition? What reason is there for holding that tradition? And that was the point at which Orthodox scholars who were engaged in these conversations started to turn to other lines of inquiry. And one of them is, well, what does it mean to be a man or a woman? Is there something inherent in maleness that makes it appropriate for men to be priests? And something inherent in femaleness that makes it inappropriate for women to be priests? And so we come to this Christian anthropology then, trying to discover the essence of what it means to be human. So as I was going through all these articles, I found, you know, that there's not a huge amount of literature. I mean, this is not a burning question for Orthodox Christians, I wouldn't say. But there's quite a variety of opinion out there. A lot of people who like write an article on what it means to be a man or a woman or on the ordination of priests. And so there's a large selection to draw from. And I couldn't include all of it in a 50-page thesis. So I needed to narrow my range of sources. And so to do that, my three criteria for including authors in my study was that they should be people who hold degrees from institutions of higher learning, so that they're actually scholars. I wanted people who showed a range of opinion, but whose opinions didn't go to the far extremes of the spectrum. And with those criteria, I was able actually to narrow my authors for my study to five individuals. And those are Madame Elizabeth Bersiegel, Father Thomas Hopko, Sister Nona Verna Harrison, Dr. Valerie Karras, and Father John Baer. So in my thesis, I actually have a little chapter that goes through a brief biographical sketch of each of those authors. And I'll just say a few things so I make sure that we're all, you know, relatively on the same page. So Madame Elizabeth Bersiegel, are there folks who are familiar with who she is? Okay, actually not that many. So Madame Elizabeth Bersiegel was a convert first to Christianity as a young woman in her teens, and then later encountered Orthodox Christianity when she was one of the first female students at the University of Strasbourg School of Theology in the 1930s. And she, through her studies, encountered the Russian emigre community in Paris. She became the spiritual daughter of Father Lev Gillet, and is very closely associated with that group of Russian emigre theologians. And she actually only became engaged on the topic of women in the church when her spiritual father recommended her to the WCC as a speaker for a conference they were putting together in the 1970s. Then from the 1970s on until her death, which I believe was in 2005, she was a very active writer and speaker on this question. And so then Father Tom Hopko, hopefully most people know who he is. He graduated from St. Vladimir Seminary in the 1960s. He actually went on, got a few other degrees from other universities, and then came back to teach at St. Vlad's, one of the most popular speakers in the United States Orthodox community. And definitely, I think, has a reputation for engaging on kind of tough questions. Then there's Sister Nona Verna Harrison. Are folks familiar with her? Okay. Actually, she spent some time in the North Bay area because one of her degrees is from the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. So she's a very highly respected patristic scholar. She's done a lot of translation of patristic texts. And she's taught for a number of years at a university in the Midwest. And her latest book, which is kind of an overview of Christian anthropology, the understanding of, you know, what it means to be human, is being used as a textbook at St. Vlad's, at Holy Cross, and even here at the GTU in Berkeley. So she's very highly respected, not only within the Orthodox community, but also outside the Orthodox community. Then there's Dr. Valerie Karras. Folks familiar with her? She's a fairly well-known speaker, I think, especially within the Greek Orthodox Church. You know, she's Greek herself. She attended Holy Cross, and then she went and got degrees in Greece, in Athens and Thessaloniki. Her doctoral dissertation through Catholic University in Washington, D.C., the liturgical participation of women in the Orthodox Church. So this question of women in the church is one of her primary scholastic interests. And then we have Father John Baer, folks familiar with him. He's currently the dean at St. Vladimir's Seminary. He's got quite a range of expertise. One of his interests is Christian anthropology. And he's done quite a bit of work on the theology of St. Irenaeus of Lyon and Clement of Alexandria. And I believe he's just published a book this year of continuing his research on Christian anthropology. I haven't read it yet. I'm still waiting to get a copy. So he's actively pursuing these questions. So those are our five authors. And I'll just mention before I go any further also that the five authors that I did use for the study, a lot of times when they're talking about this question of what it means to be a man or a woman, they'll talk about a theology of gender. And when I wrote the thesis, I had to make some language choices. And I actually didn't like using the word gender to talk about men and women, mostly because there's so many connotations to the word gender that involve our expectations of behavior for men and women that are like culturally defined. You hear a lot of talk today about gender identity and people identifying themselves as other. You know, they don't identify as a man or a woman, but just like something totally different. And so to me, the word gender seemed too complex to use for the thesis. So I actually use the word sex to talk about biological difference between men and women. And I just want to make that clear going forward in the talk. So, I mean, that's my vocabulary in this study. So then when I started gathering the works of these five authors and trying to... Oh, I'm sorry, do you have a question?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much.
No, no problem. So I was gathering as many publications of these five authors as I could and reading them. So I wanted to find out, okay, what did these five authors have to say about how the fathers understand the function or purpose of sexual differentiation in the human race? And I ran into a kind of another roadblock because I would find Dr. Valerie Karras quoting St. John Chrysostom, and Father Thomas Hopko is quoting St. Maximus the Confessor, and Sister Nona is quoting St. Gregory Nazianzen, and, you know, with all these quotes constructing fairly complex arguments. And so since they're not even starting from the same texts, I felt like I was going to wind up comparing apples and oranges in terms of which fathers they were reading and then how they used those patristic sources to understand this broader question. So since I only had 50 pages that I could to use for this inquiry, I wanted to find a source that was common to all five authors and sort of use that as the foundation of my inquiry into what the five authors have to say. And I actually found that there's only one church father that all five authors quote, and that's St. Gregory of Nyssa. And just as a reminder, St. Gregory of Nyssa is one of the Cappadocian fathers. He lived between 330 and 395, I believe. And I think he's a very well-known source in the Eastern Orthodox Church, but not as commonly cited and well-known in the Catholic or Protestant traditions. But I think my impression is that more and more scholars and theologians from various backgrounds are beginning to look at his works. So he's actually a very prominent source in the writings of these five authors. So, all five of the authors, they agree that there's a general consensus among the church fathers in general that the most fundamental principle of Christian anthropology is that all persons, both men and women, bear the image of God. And St. Gregory of Nyssa actually writes explicitly on the common nature and calling of men and women as the image and likeness of God, because he describes humanity with the following words, quote, "For the image is not in part of our nature, nor is the grace in any one of the things found in that nature, but this power extends equally to all the race," end quote. So here St. Gregory is clearly stating that God has placed his image in the whole race of humanity. And also, significantly, St. Gregory declines to link the image with anything in particular in the human person. And that actually is not something that is common to the patristic tradition in general, because some church fathers will link the image of God with reason, some church fathers link it with free will, and so you start to encounter this question of whether the image of God is in the mind, is it the soul, is the body excluded from the image of God? And essentially, one comes down to the reality that the image of God in the human person is a mystery. There is no dogmatic definition of the human person in Orthodox theology. So we have a challenge then, because, you know, at the core of our inquiry, there's this mystery that is, you know, it's very solid. The church fathers agree that this is true, but it has a nebulous quality to it. So it becomes difficult to build a thematic, a theological structure around this truth when inevitably one starts to find that it's difficult to put a lot of details around that core truth. So one of the complications then in understanding the image of God in each person is the sexual duality in the human race. And this is what I found is sort of the fundamental question. Since humans are made in the image of God, and we know that God is neither male nor female, there's no sex in God, then sex in human persons seems to be located outside of the image of God. And at the same time, we have the difficulty that God became incarnate as a male, the Father and the Son have masculine names, and we seem to preserve the male-female identification of the saints after they repose. I mean, recognize Jesus Christ as a man even after his resurrection. The Theotokos is still the mother of God. So sex still seems to have some sort of significance, even though it's not a direct reflection of anything in the Godhead. So that's the dilemma that these five authors come up against. And they spend their efforts trying to solve that question.